I am alone in my basement drinking scotch, and that means it's Jaded Gamercast.
Or Monday.
Well, days that end in Y. But I've got a nice 15-year scotch here with me. Nathan, what are you drinking?
I unfortunately forgot Guinness. Well, sorry, let me phrase that. I am drinking Guinness, but I only had one can at home and forgot the other, like, three from the 8-pack that I started earlier today at a friend's house. So once I polish this off, so in like 10 minutes or so, I have wine.
Yay! Good times. Well, as we said, this is Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Come and join us as we talk about toy soldiers like they're actually important things. Speaking of which, how did your tournament go this weekend?
Good, actually. I would say it was definitely better than our last one we ran. And we had zero rage quits, which is...
always a good thing to hear. So Aaron wasn't playing, was he?
Oh, no, he actually wasn't. No, it's funny though, because the first one we ever ran, we had one rage quit, and then the second one we ran, we had two rage quits, and we're just like, what the fuck, dude?
Gamers, like, are very, very emotional people.
Look, you know, when you are battling for the fates of an entire nothing. It's serious, serious business.
Hey, I think that goes right up with us saying, like, come and listen to us talk about toy soldiers like they're important things. You know?
Yeah, but the difference is we're in on the joke.
Yeah.
They truly believe that shit matters.
I guess so. Sorry I couldn't be there. Unfortunately, I had some stuff going on here in E-Town that prevented me from coming out to the tournament.
You need to be prepared, though, because my wife is going to guilt the shit out of you.
You know that I have no soul, so I'll just shrug it off, and it's no big deal. But as I said, I had some important things to do here in town, one of which was absolutely pantsing a Dark Elf army and proving that Toughness 3 is not the bane of my lizard men. Yes, after mopping the floor with Matt's Space Marines, I utterly, utterly mopped the floor with Brett's Dark Elves. It was a massacre.
You know, it almost feels like you're struggling to pad your record with easy wins.
Hey, like I said, Brett's a good player, man. Brett's a solid player. Matt's a solid player.
Because he's never beat you, right?
Well, you know, at this point, it's 1-0. It was a really fun game. We had a game on Friday, and, I haven't changed anything with my Lizard Men list. I feel like it's very strong. I've got some things that maybe I'm thinking about tweaking and kind of playing around with a little bit. But for the most part, I really feel like that list is coming into its own and the army is starting to play a lot smoother. I think the biggest mistake that he made in our entire game was just forgetting that he had a Hydra on the table.
But what?
Yeah, he had like two turns
in about 200 points.
He deployed it behind a big chunk of terrain and just forgot about it for two turns. Because he like started putting his casualties around it on the side of the table. So I don't know, he like assumed it was a casualty or something.
Oh, you know?
And a couple times I was just like, hey, I'm really surprised you're not doing anything with that Hydra. Like, is there a plan here? Like, is this some sort of sweet tactical move that I don't know about? He's just like,
he's waiting for you to forget about it.
Fuck. He got one breath weapon shot off on my knights, killed two of them. That was all it did the entire game. It was pretty fantastic. Other than that, you know, just been a week for sure. But let's go ahead and get into Higher Learning for this week, which I believe is High Elves, is it not?
Yeah, sure. We haven't done them yet.
No,
I know it's a fantasy army.
Fantasy army, IH.
Yeah.
So I think unless there's something we're missing. No, I think it's High Elves.
Let's go with High Elves. If we're missing something, we'll figure it out. No, Dwarves, High Elves. Yeah, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
We're good.
So I'll start us off here. I think this is a really interesting army because I think the majority of fantasy players at any given point are going to look at High Elves and say to themselves, like, I want to play a High Elf army. They're typically very common, but you don't see them a lot on the really, really competitive side of like tournaments, which is kind of interesting for the army. They have a lot of drawbacks. I think they're easily the most lopsided army in the entire game. I think that as cool as the models are and as fun as the rules are, people always have this very weird way of playing them that kind of fits their own playing style, which is cool. But I think that's why a lot of people end up choosing their other armies for tournaments and things of that nature. Now, you and I fit into that group of people where we both have looked at doing a high elf army. You were recently going to do a high elf army, but you gave it to your sister to start up Warhammer.
Yep.
I had a high elf army that's about half painted that I had worked my way into. And, you know, just kind of lost the love for it, moved on to something else. I still am not 100% sure whether I'm going to go back to that army or not. I'm just, I've got a lot of really cool kind of like, mm-hmm. you don't see a lot of those models. Like I've got Elariel and her Maiden Guard, and I was going to play with them, but now it's like it's so far removed from that version of the game that, you know, like you can't be comfortable in playing that character anymore. I mean, the rules aren't even posted online anymore. It's completely gone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think High Elves, but moving past that, I think that High Elves are probably the one army in fantasy that has had to deal with the most changes in their tactics with the changeover to 8th edition. I think the majority of armies don't have to change much. They can kind of adjust their tactics a little bit, you know, maybe take a Horde unit here or there just because, hey, now Horde gives you something, so why wouldn't you? But I think High Elves, they're the ones that really come away from 8th edition with a completely different playing style from what they had in 7th edition. Do you agree?
Maybe not play style, but I think their composition changed the most because in 7th edition, when they had that one fewer core requirement, fucking every High Elf army I ever ran into ran 2 10-man units of archers just to deal with it and then spammed the shit out of their special because their special truly are just fucking amazing. I mean,
yeah.
They have two rare choices of eagles and bolt throwers, which is typical for practically any elf army.
Right.
And, you know, they had really sort of shitty limited core, but it was the heroes, like their wizards and their special units that were just fucking outrageously good. You know, Dragon Princes right. were, in 7th edition, probably one of the best cavalry units in the game. Movement 9, 2 attacks, ASF, high you know, weapon good skill. Weapon skill. You know, like everything about them was just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
You then put a like your BSB in there with the battle banner, and they could charge a unit to the front, win combat by like 9.
Yeah.
And then run the bitches down, you know, like it's just...
Well, but this is where I disagree with you, though, because, I mean, I think that the play style is that much different because, okay, yeah, they had Always Strike First in 7th edition when the new army book came out for High Elves, but in 8th edition, that changed to where if you've got Always Strike First and the higher initiative than your opponent, you would have struck first initially, or without Always Strike First. You get to reroll your misses every turn, so, like, better mm-hmm. than Hatred. And with no changes to the points cost whatsoever. So, I mean, you know, where I said that the army was very lopsided, it did kind of make your regular everyday spearmen just that much better. Mm-hmm. And kind of made up for the fact that in the previous edition, like you said, everyone would just ignore core because their core choices were kind of pointless. You know, like, why would you take Silver Helms when you could take Dragon Princes? You know,
Helms are special. High Elves have three core choices. You're thinking of the old book.
I'm thinking of the old book.
Yeah, because, I mean, basically...
I'm an old jaded gamer.
Your choices are archers, spearmen, or spearmen with bows.
See, but Lothar and Seaguard are great because they're the unit that does everything now.
See, now I think Lothar and Seaguard are great because, you know, with shooting in two ranks and the ability to volley fire with bows... It means that they can literally deal with any situation.
Yes.
7th edition, I felt the Lothar and Seaguard just didn't really have a place because, you know, it's either you're buying expensive archers with a bow instead of a longbow, so you're losing out range, or you're buying expensive spearmen who get 5 shots a turn.
Yes.
And you're just like, why would you bother? Whereas yeah. now I think Seaguard could really fill up a hole. And I think a smart, canny high elf player is going to take a lot of, you know, Lothar and Seaguard.
Smart, canny?
Okay, these are high elf players. They're the ones that are just like, if me take Banner of Sorcery and Teclis, me not lose.
I was going to say, man, I haven't seen a canny high elf player in a long time. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
No, I think that comes with how lopsided they are. I mean, the stuff that they do well, they do so well that your daughter could win with that army, as you would say. But, you know, I really do love the army. I mean, even if we start talking about the models are, you know, they're right up there with Bretonnia when it comes to like, well, if you're going to take the time and you're going to do the work and you're really going to make this army look good, it is going to stand out and it is going to turn heads. And you're going to be exceptionally happy with it, even if you do simple color schemes.
And let us not, forget the fact that with the exception of great eagles and special characters, the entire fucking model range is plastic.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, you know, I was really...
And that to me is fantastic. I hate working with theater.
You know, I was really upset that we didn't get a new Archers box set. When the new High Elves came out, when they came out with the new book and they made new Phoenix Guard and they made new White Lions, they made the new Chariots and they made the new Heroes. And we still have these old as fuck Spearmen and we still have these old as fuck Archers. And it's like, you know, you're going to do all this stuff in plastic. Why the hell don't you revamp what's already there? I mean, it looks ridiculous. I mean, the only reason why people don't take Archers... or they don't take Spearman and Lothran Seaguard is because they don't want the fucking penis helm army.
Yeah. You know, but I don't know. I mean, for me, they, like, don't get me wrong, they show their age. They're not as nice as any of the new stuff, especially the chariot kit, because good God, Lion Chariots are fucking gorgeous. But I would rather them phase out shitty looking pewter models and leave me with subpar plastics. Then give me, you know, replace plastic with plastic and leave me like cursing the fact that I still have 100 pewter models because you couldn't be bothered to update any of the special stuff. I mean, ask all a Dark Elf player.
Yep.
What would they prefer? Prefer new warriors or would they prefer plastic witch elves, black guard, and executioners?
Cold One Knights.
Yeah. Well, their Cold One Knights are plastic with chariots.
Even. Yeah, fair enough. I think that, you know, like that's more of a personality thing. You know, I ended up when I was doing my. Or planning to do my High Elf army, I had bits ordered the Illyriel and her Maiden Guard specifically because they are essentially equipped as Lothran Seaguard, right? And they would be set apart, and you know, it'd be an army of bitches. Am I right? But no, I'm not cool.
And then I have a, you know, and then my general is actually a man, and he's the pimp. You see?
Well, you know.
With his chains and his cane. It's not a cane, it's a wizard staff. Bitch. Oh, this is going to a bad place. God.
I'm enjoying this scotch, though.
I'm going to apologize to our listeners because I'm running a tournament. I've had like 7 hours of sleep since Friday.
Don't
so
do it.
If I'm like fucking not making sense, that's why.
Well, but then you're on par with Maddie. So,
No.
I mean, okay, kind of getting to the end of this, I think High Elves, with regards to strategy, you know, they benefit enormously from Horde rules because, you know, you'll hear people talking on and on and on about how, you know, 30 Horde formation White Lions is essentially like the wrecking ball unit that will blow through almost anything on the table. And they're not wrong.
No, they're not. Like,
they're not wrong.
It's despicable. Right?
And those types of strategies with always strike first and an exceptionally high initiative, I mean, it really does set that army apart. I think where that army starts to kind of fall away is that shooting in 8th edition is not quite as effective as it used to be. Because, you know, bolt throwers are good, repeater bolt throwers are good, but you're just never going to get the type of numbers that you need to really make a difference. And, you know, you can soften units up a little bit, and that's going to make it easy for you, but it's not like Wood Elves, where back in 7th edition, shooting was the end-all be-all. That's what made the game for you. You knew you had 3 turns of shooting before you got into combat, whereas now, one or two if you're lucky.
Look,
right.
In 7th edition, I knew that taking 20 archers would annihilate a blocked unit. Like, I'd kill them to a man. And that was just a guarantee. I would do that before they got into combat. So it was just like, one less thing I need to deal with.
Well, in 8th edition, 2 units of Glade Guard almost wiped out my entire unit of Grave Guard in my Vampire Counts army in one of those games that you and I played back in 7th edition.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was one of your first games with your Wood Elf army, and you were just like, I love Glade Guard! And I was like, you go fuck yourself.
No, absolutely. But I mean, now here I am, I'm 7 games into 8th edition, and I'm just like, my Glade Guard are homeless. Like, I'm just like, ah, you know, they're okay, but I find every game they get one round of shooting and they spend 5 turns milling about trying to force another round of shooting on something. And I'm just like, what's the point?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not like Repeater Crossbowmen, right?
Yeah.
And this was one of the things in my previous, my last game against Brett, that I was trying to, you know, we were kind of talking about stuff as the game was going on, and I said, you know, this is why I love repeater crossbows, is because they still have a hand weapon and shield, and a repeater crossbow is not a close combat weapon, so when they get into combat, they're one of those few units that are allowed to essentially switch weapons. Yep. And, you know, all of a sudden, you've got a bunch of, you know, dark elves with light armor, hand weapon, and shield. That's not a bad situation to be in, because well, they're still relatively cheap, but Glade Guard are expensive as fuck. They have no armor, they have no shields, they've got nothing, so it's like, no, you're not going to reform them and put them into combat, because you'd just be giving your opponent combat resolution.
No, you're absolutely right, because that's the thing, is my Glade Guard costs 12 points naked. I mean, I can't upgrade them, and I'm pretty sure a repeater crossbowman with shield is either 10 or 11.
Cheaper
than and they're better
almost.
Well, yeah, they're cheaper by either 1 or 2 points. So I mean, yeah, fuck yeah, they're definitely good. But anyway, back to high elves.
Yeah, I was gonna say quick preview for our dark elves, for our dark elves and wood elves higher level.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really hard to talk about one elf army without drawing comparisons without going back to the other two.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
But I mean, to finish up my thoughts on high elves is I think the reason you don't see them is, they are probably the hardest army to build a list with because, you know, yes, you know, you're going to go heavy on magic because it's obvious. Yeah. But doing so eats up so many fucking points. Like if you take 100 points on a level 4, you're spending almost 400. And, you know, it's a massive amount of points.
That's a great point.
You know, so it's just like, okay, I went really heavy on magic. There is 25% of my army, okay? Yep. I need 25% in core, okay?
Yep.
What do I do with the rest of my points? Do I take a couple chariots? Do I take one unit of special? Like, it's just...
Yeah.
They're such a hard army to list build. You have an easier time with both dark elves and wood elves. That I think if people are drawn to that elf play style, they kind of look at high elves because they're drawn to the models, they read the rules, and they settle on dark elves.
I think that's very interesting, because when you talk about magic and like the top most devastating magic based armies in the game, when you compare them to lizard men, it's interesting because it's exactly what you say. You have these characters that eat up so many points in your list, and you've got so many amazing magic items to choose from, and you've got so many combos to choose from, that you kind of get into this situation where, a quarter of your list is chewed up by heroes, if not more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Typically more than that, between lords and heroes now in 8th edition. Yep. Whereas, Lizard Men, I can take one hero and he's everything. He's my general. He's leadership 10. He's a level 4 mage with a shit ton of spells that dominates the magic phase. And he's my BSB. So, you know, whereas you look at high elves and it's like, well, you have to take two to three characters to make that happen.
Well, yeah, exactly. To do what you just said, I would need to dump a shit ton of points into an archmage. Then I need to take a prince and then another hero as my BSB. And all of those characters need magic items.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like, I'm going to spend 250 points on war gear, not, you know, and that's not counting the base cost of those models. So that's why I think high elves are sort of a rare breed is, you know, the armies you see try to fucking demolish you in the magic phase and the shooting phase, and then they'll always take that horde of white lions because it's a no-brainer, but they really don't know what to do. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
It's a harder list to play, whereas if you wanted to build a really smart, really hard-hitting high elf list that doesn't take those sort of cornerstones, people struggle.
Well, and you know, I think that that is the challenge to High Elves, is to be really competitive with High Elves. You really have to know what you're doing, and you have to have a plan, and you have to have a really solidly built list. And I'm not talking 120 archers in a fucking folding fortress that's 12 stories tall. You know, I mean, like, you know how to play your army. Okay, now here's something that I actually realized recently that we never really got into for higher learning, but there are armies that obviously have their own lore. Nathan, how do you feel about high magic?
Okay. You know,
you and I have this argument
Oh, good God. We have had this argument maybe 100 times. Okay. I believe that high magic is one of, if not the best lores in the game, including all the rulebook lores.
Yes.
It's easy to cast. You've got phenomenal choice of spells that really allow you to do everything. with that being said, if you're going to take a Book of Hoeth, I think it's a waste. Because all of the cast values, the way magic works in 8th edition, you're casting on too few dice to ever realistically pop a lot of doubles.
Yes.
So that's why I always feel if you're going to go big with the Book of Hoeth, you need to take one of the rulebook lores that have the monster spells that need you to roll 5 and 6 dice.
Right, like Shadow.
Well, exactly. Shadow's phenomenal for
it. Shadow is a great lore. It's just you and I go back and forth because I like Light because it's dirt cheap. You like Shadow because it's really devastating. Problem with me is I always look at that and I say, like, the casting values are too high.
Yes. But if you're going to run the High Elf, you know, Archmage, level 4 with Book of Hoeth, yes, and a Banner of Sorcery,
yes,
you know you've got plenty of power dice. You're going to be able to cast 2 monster spells, get them both off with the Irresistible Irresistible, so they can't be dispelled. And that's why, for me, I love high magic. I love Drain magic is such a brilliant spell, especially if someone takes Shadow. Like, if someone takes Shadow, you cast Drain magic, you've shut them out of the magic phase, even if they're level 4.
Well, that's one of the things that shuts down a slam that people, they just ignore. You know, like, you see so many High Elf players pull out Teclis, or they pull out the Book of Hoeth. And for those people who don't know, Teclis and or the Book of Hoeth essentially allow any doubles rolled on a cast that passes the casting value goes off as irresistible. So that's essentially an irresistible that does not suffer from a miscast. It's a phenomenal item. Now, you know, we go back and forth. I mean, I really feel like high magic is a fantastic lore. I don't think that you can ignore it. I think that if you're going to say that it's not good with the Book of Hoeth, I say drop the Book of Hoeth. You know,
I'm with you 100%.
You know, I say take the stuff that gives you the plus to casting and dispel. I say take the stuff that makes you just this, you know, monster in the casting phase. Shut up. I'm not done yet, Nathan.
Fuck you.
You cock-sucking and I love you. Anyways, but what I'm saying is, like, you know, you can't just ignore the fact that it's there. Vol's Unmaking and Flames of the Phoenix are two of the best spells in the game. When you can literally knock a 100-point item that is the hinge of an army's strategy off the table turn one is unbelievably good. You know, like,
you can undress Archaon and make him a bitch.
Yes. I mean, if you're playing a Chaos Army that's got the banner that reduces your leadership and all that kind of stuff, you just go mundane banner. You know, you're playing against an Orc and Goblin Army and they have, like, the Staff of Sneaky Stealing where they're, you know, removing your Dispel Dice. It's gone. You're literally just taking away all of the stuff that they say, like, I take this character because then I can take this magic item. And most characters without those magic items are virtually useless. You know, even if you know that you're going to charge into a unit that has a character with, you know, Sword of Heroes. Is it the Sword of Heroes in the new, the one that gives you plus one attack, plus one strength for every character in a unit? The Death Star Killer, essentially.
Yeah.
If you know you're going to charge into that, you just go mundane sword, hand weapon. I mean, dude, it's so
the fucking it vampire
casts on, it casts on a 12? Who gives a fuck? That's nothing. Oh, yeah. That's
no, for sure. I mean, I think if you're going to take the mundane Archmage, you got to spend the 10 points on the Silver Wand, so you know a fifth spell. So that way there's only one spell in the entire lore you don't know.
Well, when you roll doubles, you're in good shape anyways.
Well, exactly. I throw five dice. I'm going to get doubles. I'm going to pick what I want.
Well, and that's one of the great things about high magic at this point, you know, from the transition to 7th to 8th, is that drain magic is not a signature spell. You automatically know that.
Yeah.
And when you're rolling five dice, you know you're going to hit a double for the most part. So you get to pick the spells that you want, get yourself Vols Unmaking, get yourself Flames of the Phoenix, get Curse of Arrow Attraction, and you are going to wreck your opponent.
Fucking Courage of Inarian, make a unit stubborn.
Yes, like, it's just Courage of Inarian is fantastic.
It is a phenomenal lore.
I love it when you cast that on a 10-man unit of swordsmen. Or not swordsmen.
Swordmasters.
Swordmasters, great. Great sword mastermen. I am more than halfway through my glass of scotch, and Nathan was late coming into the podcast, so I was drinking.
That was because I was out drinking with people after my tournament. That is why
All right, fair enough, fair enough. Anyways, that is an exceptionally in-depth higher learning for this.
I think it's quite obvious about the higher learnings from armies that we show an interest in and armies that don't. Where it's just like, they look pretty.
Well, usually you can tell if it's an army that you and I don't show an interest in, where we start out the higher learning by saying, like, I haven't read this codex.
Look, we never admit to that. We just pretend. We just talk and it's obvious we haven't.
Well, I think with high elves, I think high elves are the anomaly in the sense that they are so lopsided. And they easily have the biggest change in playstyle between 7th and 8th edition.
Yeah, because it's true. They went from being all casty-blasty to get up there and stab them.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, their core went from being completely useless to actually being, like, the end-all, be-all of core units.
Which is
pretty freaking good, you know?
Fuck, if you run a 50-man horde of High Elf Spears, everyone swings.
Well, and the way that... we're still in higher learning, by the way. And the way that buffs work in the new Lords of Magic, you know, if you take Lore of Beasts and you give them Wilson's Wild Form, I mean, all of a sudden you've got Strength 4, Toughness 4, you know, Always Strike First, Rerolling Misses. I mean, that's enormous. Fighting in four ranks! Four motherfucking ranks, for God's sakes. Like,
was it Glittering Robes from Lore of Metal gives him a 3-up save?
Oh my god, all of a sudden they're just like this heavily armored knights on foot unit fighting in four ranks. Did I mention four ranks? Anyways, moving on.
five if you're in a horde.
Oh my god. I got a little heart just then. Yeah, yeah. That is definitely the situation. So, Nathan, the topic for this week, hit me.
Anytime
you sigh before we go into the topic, I know there's nerd rage on the way.
Fuck. I would like to talk about how Games Workshop is ruining Warhammer 40,000.
I agree.
Because, I mean, all right, if you have been a long-time listener of this podcast, you know that I love my 40K.
Of course.
I love it to death. And at this moment,
when you know you're wrong, you love it to death.
It's like you and thinking you can beat my wood elves with your lizardmen.
No reply. I'm just not even going to reply.
Yeah, but it's like you try to get a rise out of Manny by saying he's never beat you. But
that's why you refuse to play me again.
Look, I'll play you again. I'll whoop your ass. That's okay. Uh-huh. But for me,
good luck, my friend.
For me, I love my 40K, and at this moment, I am so fucking fed up with the game that I honestly have no urge to play it. Like, when it comes down between playing a game of 40K or staying at home painting, I choose to paint. Like, it's just, I'm so done because, I just can't deal with the fact that Games Workshop, comes all over the place and has a hard-on for Space Marines. Like, yeah. I can't fucking do it anymore because, I mean, we've worked at Games Workshop, we worked there back when 4th edition came out.
Yep.
And it was like, hey, surprise, it's new. It was just like, hey, back then there was the Marine Codex. There were those three shitty supplements that were basically just ways to sell another Marine Codex.
Right.
Then 4th edition came out, they came out with a couple armies, Black Templars got their own codex and raised some eyebrows. Dark Angels got updated, Blood Angels got thrown into a PDF, and all of that happened in 5 years. You know, so it's just like, you know, it's not like anything was like bam, 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 bam. But here we are in 5th edition, and there have been, I'm going to have to count on my fingers, so bear with me. I've been drinking. all right, why don't we just go through the releases?
I was going to say, I can't talk.
All right. Space Marines were the first one. Space Marines were the first book. They're always the first book because they're in every fucking starter set.
Of course.
After Marines, they put out, what was it? Guard?
Yep.
Yes, Guard. Guard came out. You know what? Good for them. Guard were on an old book. They were actually running a third edition book. Totally okay. They had it coming. And then Space Wolves came out. And you're just like, okay, you know what? They're old. They were running that third edition bullshit. That's fair. They were due. Same way Dark Angels got released in 4th.
Get to the point, Nathan.
All right. The point is, every other Codex release has been Space Marines.
Yes.
Out of 6 fucking books in the last 3 years, 3 of them.
Now here's where the real frustration comes in for Nathan and myself, and we'd had a bit of a chat before we started recording. We were very excited for the Grey Knights and Demon Hunters when they were going to be announced to be released in April. Now, this was right up until the point that we realized that there's probably not going to be a whole lot of Demon Hunters happening here.
Nope.
You're going to get a little... Now, this is a rumor that I had heard. You're going to get a little bit of Demon Hunters, Xenos Hunters, and Hereticus all in the one Demon Hunters book. So what they're doing...
Oh, it's not even called Demon Hunters anymore. They're basically cutting that out. It's the Grey Knight Codex.
It is the Grey Knight Codex. It is another Space Marine fucking army.
Because basically what it is a full-on Space Marine army that has 3 special characters, which are, you know, the one, you know, the named Inquisitor for all 3 branches of the Ordos.
Right.
Then they've got one choice in the elite slot, rumored. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't have a book in front of me. It's not going to be out for another 2 months. And I haven't looked at the supposed leaked PDF. Okay, that's not true. I read 2 pages of it, then got disgusted and closed it.
Oh, is there a leaked PDF? I didn't even know that shit was out there.
Yeah. You know, but basically...
You're not even going to talk about it. All right, go to town.
They peeled back absolutely everything that made the Grey Knights and the Demon Hunters Codex really fucking interesting. And all they did was just pad it with all of this superfluous Space Marine bullshit. You know, so basically now we have, you know, I don't even know what kind of fetishists these are. Demon fetishists? Like, what are they? Like, they've got lava lamps in all of the fucking Thunderhawks.
Chrome fetishists.
Like, you know.
Or what is it? Scribing.
Yeah.
They're purity seal fetishists.
Fuck me. You know, like fucking tapestry bullshit, writing on everything, black lights, lava lamps, you know, like fucking all of that bullshit, you know, because they're supposed to be so goth. They're the goths. They're the goths.
Oh, I can't come unless you melt wax on my face and make it into a purity seal. Okay. You know. There was a very blurry picture of what was supposedly like a newish style dreadnought. It looked like Voltron and or Gundam. That's what I was going to say. I fucking hate it.
I hate it too.
I think it's exactly what we talked about in the Fetish Marine episode, where we sat there and we said they're ruining what made Space Marines good in the first place by just making shit up randomly. The cool thing about Grey Knights is they were 2 goddamn units, Terminators and Marines. And they were like, and they mix in with everything. That was perfect. Why they feel the need to sit there and expand on it and expand on it.
Well, expand, and what I don't get
fucking drives me crazy.
You look at it 6 years ago, or even longer, 6 plus years ago.
Yeah.
You know, what made your Blood Angels where they were painted red.
Yeah,
you know, your Space Wolves are painted baby blue.
Like any real Space Marine chapter.
Yes. You know, and all of the fluff said, you know what? Everyone listens to the Codex Astartes. There is some minor fluctuations where certain legions and chapters favor certain units and tactics. So, you know, we like lots of assault squads.
You know, and that was actually a really interesting thing that I came to realize, well, through the podcast, because, you know, like I said, we treat it like it's serious stuff.
But I'm kind of a big deal.
Right. You know, this is kind of a big deal, this podcast. No. It's the fact that previously, I would say 3rd and 4th edition 40K, they actually talked about the Codex, right? Mm-hmm. This edition and the newest edition of the Space Marine book, like, there's very, very little mention of Codex Astartes.
Yeah.
There's very, very little mention of this idea that all of these Space Marines are supposed to conform to this Codex created by Reboot Guillemot. And, you know, it's just, it kills it for me. It kills it. And I mean, like, that's why my Space Marine army is fucking vanilla Codex Marines, because mm-hmm. I hate the idea of, you know, Matt and his dirty motherfucking Blood Angels, you know, and John and his dirty motherfucking Space Wolves. And, you know, it's just every last time I go into this conversation, I sit there and I go, but, like, I love Space Marines, mm-hmm. but just Space Marines. Why can't you know, but just like be Space Marines?
Yeah, you know, and like I said, it's just like, you're absolutely right. You know, this Codex comes out, this edition comes out, and they basically, you know, they mention the Codex Astartes in passing as, oh, it's what the Ultramarines do.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that way the Space Wolves can come out, and they're just like, no, they don't use the Codex Astartes. They use wolves. They use wolves everywhere. Wolves wipe their asses. Wolves are the toilet paper. You know, like, fucking...
Wolf pelts rolled up on rolls, and they wipe their ass with the wolf pelts, and then they ride the wolves.
All right.
And actually, then it's wolves riding wolves, riding cyber wolves, which
you know, it is. Although, actually, someone at the tournament thanked me for the term fetish marines, and I said it wasn't me, it was you, but it was our podcast.
Give me my due! Give me my fair due! I've created the term fetish marines.
And then he went on to an excellent thing, which I think is probably going to become a running joke. But he was basically just like, yeah, you know, all of a sudden it's just like, come, my wolf brothers, gather your wolf pelts and your wolf tails and your wolf ears so we can get our wolf claws to go to the wolf tavern and we shall meet at wolf o'clock.
I dropped my microphone. That was so funny.
And honestly, ever since he said that, I just cannot get the, and we shall meet at wolf o'clock. Out of my fucking head. And I just laugh every time. But I mean, that's the point is, before, you know, your Space Wolves were Codex Marines that had pets. And they're like, we have one unit of wolves. That's why we're different. And, you know, we like to put our scouts in power armor, you know, so that way they live long enough to get good. And we're like, okay, that's cool. Well, and now it's just everything so over the top, and they invent units like, oh, Storm Ravens have short buses, or Blood Angels have short buses, and Storm Raven. Yeah, and they have cups of blood, and being close to this cup of blood makes them shrug off every wound imaginable. And you're just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, why do you just keep inventing reasons why these books ignore the Codex Astartes? Why are you just pulling shit out of your fucking ass and like, you know, it just bothers me because each book has to be more ridiculous than the last.
Well, you know, and I think that's a huge point, is that, you know, people don't even really notice it until you start talking about it. And I mean, I've had this conversation with people in the local Games Workshop, and they'll just kind of be like, you know, you're kind of right. Like, I'm starting to get, like, you know, sick of this idea. And there are people out there who already play against the grain. I mean, you and I have worked in the store, and we know that people do come into the store, and they're those underdog mentality type people where you say, like, well, which is the army that people don't typically play a lot? And then you and I would jump on the whole Dark Eldar train, like, motherfucker, Dark Eldar, here's why they're awesome. And then
dude, our store sold Eldar.
We sold
so
more Dark
much
Eldar
Dark
than
Eldar.
Anybody, because you and I were whoring it. But let's get down to the brass tacks of this. You and I are in agreement with a lot of other people out there who have worked for Games Workshop on even an executive level. It's bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. They get rid of people who know what they're doing and who make good decisions, and they keep people who are idiots who drink the motherfucking Kool-Aid. And what's really frustrating about it is, on a business decision level, you can understand the idea that Marines, 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 Marines equals money. And I get it. But, you know, like I said, even in a previous episode, once again, you know, there's a difference between hating the company and absolutely loving the designers and the playtesters and the people who are really putting the time and effort into making this work. But it's like a bad movie. It's like Terminator Salvation, where the first 30 minutes are pretty good. And then the movie gets progressively worse and worse and worse because the producers keep sending notes down to the screen like, we don't think this ending is good. We think this ending is too confusing. John Connor should have an open heart transplant as the climax of the movie as performed by his wife, the vet. Like, it's just...
See, I've never brought myself to watch it because I knew it was
It's fucking awful. I don't play McGee. McGee's fantastic. He does Supernatural. And the first 45 minutes of the movie is pretty fucking good. But you can tell that, like, it's notes after notes after notes from the producer, the money, right? And I think that that's Games Workshop, right? It's the money running the game.
Yes.
And, you know...
No, and I think it's you're absolutely right. It's these executives that look at it and they're just like, well, 40K is our most popular game. Why is that? And someone says, it's because they have fucking Space Marines. Yeah. If Fantasy had Space Marines, they would sell like gangbusters, you know? And so it's just like, for me, I love Fantasy because Fantasy is refreshing because I can go to a tournament and I will not play the same army twice. And if I do, that's like fucking rare. Like, it's my God, there were two Orc players here and I played them both? Crazy! Yes.
Well, you had said that in the last podcast where you said that, you know, in a Fantasy tournament, you're not going to play a Marine army. And I kept thinking to myself, like, well, what would technically be the Marine army for Fantasy? But there is none. Because if you look at the last starter sets that have come out since...
They've never
duplicated the same army over and over again. And
unless you count Orcs and Goblins, because 6th edition had Orcs and 7th edition had Goblins.
But no, I don't count that. I don't count that because that's a pretty stark difference between goblins and orcs, right?
But that's as close as it gets every other time. Totally, you know, you had what, Empire orcs, then you had dwarves and night goblins, now you have high elves and skaven.
I'm slowly converting you, dude. I'm slowly converting you over.
No, you don't have to do any work. 8th edition is brilliant. The games are fun, and 40K is just pumping out more
slowly
space
fucking it up.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, okay, we know Grey Knights are next, and so we know the army after that is going to be not Grey Knights. You know, Necrons should be the next one because they're so
But
who knows? Who knows? I'm not saying they are.
We know that Sisters of Battle are at least a year off, and we know that Necrons, they don't have to do much to make them work. They don't have to do any more plastics. They can get away with another plastic.
They'll do plastics. They'll probably do more.
That's what I mean.
They'll probably do... something else, but I know.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, they might do plastic immortals, or they might do like a plastic. Like, I kept thinking to myself that they might end up doing a plastic kit that essentially does all three. If you read the fluff for Necrons, there are how many gods for the Necrons?
Four.
So we know that there's two: the Deceiver and the Nightbringer. So I kept thinking to myself, like, maybe they'll do another plastic kit for the Deceiver, the Nightbringer, and the new Necron God that they decide to throw in there. But okay, you know what? That's actually very interesting, because let's talk about Iron Hands. Iron Hands are a very, very interesting Space Marine chapter that is dedicated to the Mechanicus, and... if you don't know anything about the Mechanicus, they are the arm of the Imperium that are essentially worshipping the what they refer to as the Machine God, the Omnisaya, which is what some conspiracy... Well, okay, again, this is us talking about toy soldiers as if they were important things.
Hey, look, I was actually trying...
Conspiracy theorists... we'll actually talk about the Iron Hands and the Omnisaya as actually being a Necron god.
Mm-hmm. All right, listen. I was explaining to friends of ours who were picking up our daughter to watch her for the week, well, for Saturday, the setting of our tournament, because it was, you know, Horus Heresy, Battle of Istvan 5.
Yes.
And so I literally was just like, well, you know, in the history, like, you know, 10,000 years ago, I'm like, wait. Well, you see, the game has this backstory. And because I realized how fucking ridiculous.
That's like me trying to describe to my wife why Gold Chocobo
son. Gold Chocobo son.
Gold Chocobo son. brilliant. You know, I think that one of my biggest problems with Space Marines and even the Ultramarines movie that came out recently written by Dan Abnett, as much as I enjoyed it, it doesn't work. You know, there's so many problems with the movie. I'm freaking like smacking the mic at this point. Jesus Christ, I'm drunk.
Yes, you and me both.
Oh my God, are you already into the wine? Like you've been pouring wine for a while now?
Yeah, I'm almost done the bottle.
Anyways, that movie does a good job of capturing what makes Space Marines entertaining. Now, that does not coincide with the game. It does not coincide with a lot of the fluff, and it does not coincide with gamers. And I think that, you know, from a movie watcher standpoint, like I used to do a blog where I would sit there and I would do movie reviews, right? So, I mean, I love watching movies. I love reviewing movies. Obviously, I can't shut my fucking mouth for 2 seconds, as this podcast will show. But, like, it was one of those things that, like, the movie is great. But from the perspective of somebody who plays the game, it's fun from a fanboy standpoint, but it's nothing but it doesn't match up. Now, what I've always loved about Dan Abnett, or as we refer to him, Dag Nabbit, is basically the dude writes great books, does not play the game, as far as I knew. He doesn't play the game, doesn't understand like the rules side of things, but like he writes the stories. Like Gaunt's Ghost, if you've never read Gaunt's Ghost, motherfucker, you are missing out. That book series is amazing, and we could do an entire podcast about Gaunt's Ghost, which we may actually do in the future.
Yes,
this will be the spoiler alert podcast.
No, but I mean, like, seriously, it's clear that Dan Abnett doesn't play the game, because I remember, you know, coming from the game and playing it for years before reading my first Abnett. I started on Eisenhorn, which is absolutely fantastic.
Phenomenal.
You
know,
if you're going to read any Black Library, read Eisenhorn.
Read Eisenhorn.
Move on to
Ravenor.
Yes, and then jump into Gaunt's Ghost. Because if you're like, but there are 15 books. Do I really want to get started? You do.
Yes, you
really do.
You fucking do. Imagine if you've ever watched Band of Brothers. Imagine Band of Brothers.
In space, motherfucker.
Fighting aliens and shit.
But no, as I was saying, Eisenhorn starts with a gunfight.
Yes.
And, you know, it starts off, he's just like, oh, why is he running away from the las guns? Like, that's honest to God what I've said. I'm just like, nah, but they're not going to hurt you. They can't hurt shit.
Armor.
But then, you know, at the end, you know, by the end of the book, you're just like, oh no, las guns are good in the fiction.
See, and you know, like, okay. I think that kind of encompasses the point of why the new Demon Hunters book, I'm sorry, fuck that, the new
Grey Knights book. Grey Knights. And they even get the short bus.
Oh my God, I've got a Gundam on my team. You know, what made the Grey Knights really sell, and I can say this with perfect certainty, what made the Grey Knights really sell when they came out is the fact that you could incorporate them into one of three different armies. Two at the time, three after the fact. But it was the idea that anybody who liked the idea of Grey Knights and played a Space Marine army or Guard army or Sisters of Battle army could paint up a five-man unit of Terminators, bring them out to a game, and have a fucking fantastic time. Now, it seems as though Games Workshop has moved away from this idea of and I'm getting off topic here, I'm aware, but they've moved away from this idea of being able to augment an army that you already have with units from an outside source, whether that's Dogs of War, or whether it's Grey Knights, or it's Demon Hunters. When I had originally built up my Imperial Guard army, the idea of that army was that I was going to bring in a Inquisitor Demon Hunter from the Demon Hunters book and put him into my Guard army and make it a really fighty Guard army. But they keep pushing away from that to the point where you can't do that. Like, you pick a codex and you fucking stick to it and you can't go anywhere outside of it. And God, that drives me crazy. Maybe it's just me. I've been drinking scotch. It's a 15-year-old... oh, God, I don't even remember the name of it. I just picked it up. I just picked it up last night. Dalwhinnie? That's what it is. It is good. It's quite peaty and very smooth, kind of a yellowish golden color. That's Jaded Scotch Fest.
You know, actually, while we're talking about booze and drinking, I just have to say this. I told this to you when it happened Friday, but I need to share it because it was hilarious. So my wife and I went to the liquor store and we bought, you know, they have a case special if you buy six. So that's usually the way my wife and I do it. You know, we'll buy the six and we'll drink through them and buy six more because at least you save a little bit of money. We bought it. We brought it into the house. And Friday morning, my daughter gets out of bed. She walks over. She sees this bottle of alcohol. She gets excited and she goes, pointing to it and goes, "Uncle Lang." So the fact that my daughter reassociates bottles of alcohol with should be telling about how much we drink when we're together.
I think that that's really it, is I don't drink that much, right? Like, I drink every once in a while, have a glass of scotch at the end of the night. Every once in a while, I'll have a drink here and there. But for the most part, I drink in two separate occasions: when Nathan is in town and when I'm doing the podcast or when I'm painting. Actually, I do drink quite a bit while I'm painting, but all right, let's get back to topic here. Let's get back to topic and let's really sum up our feelings about this. Games Workshop, fucking stop! Stop!
Yes.
Stop!
Seriously. I mean, like, that was the thing, is when they updated the FAQs and they were like, "Hey, look, Dark Angels and Black Templars get Codex Space Marine gear." For a moment, I was giddy because, you know, I'm just like, oh my God, does this mean they're not going to do any more Space Marine codexes? Yeah, you said that
on a previous podcast.
But I, honest to God, at this point, I just don't believe it. Like, I bet it's going to go Grey Knights, some other non-Space Marine army, then they're going to be like, Blood Ravens need one because everything's so bird-like and raven-y. And
yeah. Well, no.
They were in a video game.
They forgot about Blood Ravens already. They already forgot about Blood Ravens. I guarantee you we will never see another thing referring to Blood Ravens ever again.
Oh, until Dawn of War 3, because they love the Blood Ravens. I mean, they invented them, right? They
I guess that's technically true.
But no, seriously, like I said, I'm just like, I don't know. I just don't trust it.
Wait. What was the progenitor chapter of the Blood Ravens?
Dark Ravens. Fuck define.
Dark Ravens? Black Ravens? What are they called?
I don't know. I'm Wikipedia-ing it right now because
I think it's Storm Ravens. There's so many fucking chapters at this point of inebriation. I cannot fucking remember. But anyways, who's Shrike? Shrike is from what?
Oh, he's Raven Guard.
Raven Guard. Their progenitor chapter is Raven Guard. Nobody with any sort of self-respect plays Raven Guard after Graham McNeil's fucking Ultramarines book, where he just plagiarizes Star Wars throughout the entire fucking book. You and Pausanias shouldn't attack that tower. That's more like suicide. I'm not even doing justice to the fact that it's like word for word Star Wars, but anyways. Let's move on to the stupidity check for this week.
All right.
I recently, oh God, I already forgot about it. Hold on, I saved it. I saved it in a browser. Prepared. Okay, here it is.
Oh my God, busty Asians? That's the stupidity
busty
check?
Busty Asian beauties, my friend. Busty Asian beauties.
So premium membership. Worth it.
Well worth it. If you watch Supernatural, it's funny. Anyways, okay, so we all know that the Orc and Goblins are coming out recently. We've had a little bit of chatting regarding the new Orc and Goblin books, some of the changes to them. Somebody posted something very interesting recently where they said that one of the designers had gone on and on saying that, you know, oh, this is really going to take orcs and goblins in a new direction. And from what I've seen, it really doesn't take anything in a new direction. It pretty much is the same army with new abilities. Now, that's not necessarily the stupidity check for this week. What is the stupidity check for this week is people, and I've heard this on podcasts, I've heard it, I've seen it on posts, and I've
come
heard
on,
it,
call out stupid podcasts, you have to.
Okay, this was specifically Podhammer was where I heard this specifically, and they weren't hardcore about it, like as this was their biggest problem with it, but this is more like posts and, you know, talk in the stores and things of this nature. In the new Orc and Goblin book, there is the new Orcs and Goblins giant spider, right? They have it available to be seen on the Games Workshop website.
Nice kit.
Oh, phenomenal kit. But failed stupidity check. People are bitching and complaining about the fact that this thing is too big, finger quotes. It's too big. It is too big. You can't play a game with things that are big. I think that it's fucking retarded. I mean, now listen, this is a big kit. This is probably the biggest kit, and I would say
it is hands down the biggest fantasy kit.
Biggest kit that we have seen for fantasy. Now, this is stupid. This idea that bigger equals better or bigger equals broken. I don't care how you look at it. Yeah, it's big. It's a 100 millimeter by 150 millimeter base. It is enormous. It is a gigantic kit. It is fucking huge. And I mean, that measurement is posted on the Games Workshop website. But that does not equate to domination, right? Listen, we've got Bane Blades in 40K. They're slowly incorporating flyers on a regular basis. And the game is better for it. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think if you're going to complain about how big the model is and how big its base is, you know, that's just because, you know, they're probably only doing it because they're like, well, if I march down the flank.
Change is scary.
Well, you know, not even that. They're probably just trying to power game that shit. Because when you have a base that big, you're not going to be able to hide it from flank charges. You're not going to be able to sneak it around the side. And so, you know, that's probably all it is these guys that are just like, you know, this fantastic 300-point monster. Because it really is. Its rules are phenomenal. I would not mind if my opponent showed up with one or two of them. I really think they're on par with a tree man.
Well, I think that that's I think that that's a very good point, because I think that that's what people are losing sight of. I think they're losing sight of the fact that this is adding a new dynamic to the game that wasn't previously there. I mean, the biggest thing that you can expect to see on a table right now is either a greater daemon or a tree man or maybe a giant.
A dragon.
Yeah, you're right. A dragon is definitely one of the bigger, what we always refer to as nuclear weapons, tactical.
Are you at the bottom of your cup of scotch?
I put it down about 10 minutes ago because I hit the bottom. But no, you know, like the tactical nuclear weapons of fantasy has always been dragons. If you have a dragon on your side of the table, you can expect your enemy to essentially sit back and wait for you to deploy that dragon. If both of you have dragons, it's like you deploy it, they deploy it, and it just turns into like, well, whoever's standing at the end is the one who's standing. And especially yeah. now with breath weapons, it's like dragons are fucking enormous. This is essentially a dragon for the goblin army. Because let's be straight up. The Wevran, not that scary.
No.
And you know what? On top of that, I hate the new Wevran model. I think it looks...
Oh, the Azhag the Slaughterer
one?
Oh
my god, the pose is stupid. I don't like the way that it looks. I think it looks like a dragon with Down syndrome. Oh, jeez.
If only this were 40K and I could take the short bus. Oh.
But anyways...
Look, we've offended our listener at this point.
Well, fuck him. No, you know what? This comes down to one thing. Why are you afraid of change? Why are you afraid of this idea of a massive model coming out onto the table? It's actually a detriment.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is true line of sight. Every cannons will have
right.
true line of sight to it at 100% of the time. You can't do anything about
now,
it.
Now, at the same time, according to the points, costs, and abilities and things of that nature, it is feasible to take three of these massive kits in one goblin army, which I
love. Yeah, but I mean, if they are naked, zero upgrades, you're yes. still spending just shy of 900 points on that.
Right. And so we're talking 2,500, 300, 3,000 point games.
Yes, because you'd need one as a dedicated to a level four, and then two as your rares.
Yes.
Because any more than that, like, yes, you could take four technically in a grand formation, but you couldn't fit three in rare choices with percentages.
I think that's true.
So I mean, yeah, you know, yes, you could take three of them. That's 1,000 points, but you have to be playing at least a 2,500 point game for that. No, more than that.
More than that. 3,000.
Oh no, you could play 25 if you took them without upgrades. You could take two in your rares.
You've read more of the book than I have.
They're like 290 points, so that's right. why I know if you did not take, if you took one upgrade, you could not take a naked one as your second one. Like,
well,
that's the point.
You know my Orc and Goblin army. If it's not a Doom Diver, it's not worth Goblin. That's a
look,
gay reference. I'm drunk. You know, I really start
we
to worry when
fears.
You and I are just laughing at each other laughing. That the podcast has become far too lowbrow. And then I have to remind myself that it was kind of lowbrow to begin with.
Hey, look, we were not sure if this was going to be a mature audience or a PG thing. And we dropped an F-bomb 7 minutes into episode one. And we're like, well, it looks like that decided it. Because what did you say? We're like, oh, we'll try not to swear.
We'll see how it goes. 7 minutes. Oh god, but okay, don't be afraid of change. Now, you know, I think that
don't be afraid of change, and if you're an Orc and Goblin player, I think you should take one. They're fantastic. Okay. You will never regret it. As
of fun painting that kit too, and I think that kit allows for I don't know if you've even thought about this, Nathan, but that kit allows for some very, very interesting Tyranid conversions if you want to try to like convert your own you know,
I've already thought about it.
Hey, you didn't even get that far.
Crapping out baby gaunts. Oh, son.
Well, no, you can make your own hero duel.
That is true.
Like, you could make your own hero duel with a pair of wings and, like, you know, mess around with the way that the model is done and just be like, bam, there you go. But, you know, I love the idea of the fact that they're pushing these big scale, like grand type kits. And I love the fact that they're putting it into a horde army where, you know, like, hey, it makes business sense. And it also makes fluff wise type sense as well. You know, you could play a very cool themed goblin army where you're playing, you know, spider riders, giant spiders, and like, hey, go to town. Like, just do your entire army fucking spiders and make, you know, various friends of ours cry at their arachnophobia.
Yes. You know, I do believe that arachnophobia is a job requirement to become manager of that store.
For manager Games Workshop. That's an inside
joke. Both you. That was one was for both Mark and Jason.
There you go, dude. Oh, Lord. I'm done. I'm done. Are you done?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to start giggling here pretty quick because I'm out of wine. I don't know what I'm going to do.
That's Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.
Ha 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 ha